drop in the ocean that don't nobody notice. Maybe it's all just in your head.
Good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Expressive Arts Collective. I'm your host, Sue Gothier-Penn. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and expressive arts therapist. And today we have a guest, Terry Goldstein.
Hi.
And then we'll also have Paige Polonis jumping in. Christian is not with us this morning. They'll be back next week. But today you have myself, Terry, and Paige. Terry, you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Terry Goldstein. I'm an associate professional clinical counselor. I'm an expressive arts therapist. I love getting messy and dirty. And I also really enjoy working with OCD clients, anxiety, depression. You name it, we'll talk about it.
Awesome. Paige, you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Good morning. My name is Paige Polonis. I am the founder and executive director of City Heart. I'm born and raised in Long Beach, and I am a student at the in the marriage and family therapy program, so I'm super excited to get to chat with you both.
Yes, very excited. So, Terry and I are both expressive arts therapists, and that's how we met. I think you reached out to me on Facebook many years ago.
A long time ago.
Because... if you don't know, there aren't very many expressive arts therapists in the South Bay. We're kind of few and far between. So it's important for us to connect and know one another, not just for referrals, but for like kind of like moral support, because we're kind of like a different breed of therapist. So Terry and I have known each other for a couple of years. We love to geek out on all things expressive arts therapy. And you have some specialties that, you know, I don't work with that I'm really interested in talking to you about today. And just like anything really.
Yeah, and I think you have a lot of specialties that I don't work with, right? Like, I think you see more LGBTQ.
Absolutely.
More addiction.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more teenagers and OCD. I think you see a lot of teens too as well, right?
I do. I work with a lot of teens. Yeah. But you specialize in OCD, which is something that fascinates me. And I really don't know much about because I haven't had many clients with that. And you were actually the one who was like, if you ever do get one, you got to make sure that you send them for specialty care.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know about. So you're educating me. So anyway, tell us more about you. Tell us about expressive arts, OCD. Where do you want to dive in?
Oh, gosh. I don't even know where to start. I mean, first of all, I will say it's been nice to like be here with you and to get to know you, especially because there aren't a lot of expressive arts therapists here in South Bay. It's hard when you're done with grad school and then like you're like, wait, where are my people?
Mm-hmm.
Can't find anyone. I feel like we're like the unicorn therapists.
Totally. Absolutely.
So I'm so happy to be here. I'm so excited.
Yay.
I think what really drew me to working with OCD clients is that I was working at a nonprofit center, and I was working with someone and they had OCD, and it was a psychoanalytic psychodynamic center.
Hmm.
And just doing my own research, being like, wait, like, I'm not supposed to be doing this type of therapy with this person. This doesn't feel right. But the beautiful part of it was that I was already instinctively doing exposures with this person. I had no idea. I remember using art to like create things around contamination OCD, sort of like, hey, let's use this brown paint and pretend it's poop in session. Stuff like that. And so I was already naturally doing these exposures.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I sort of realized what I was doing and what treatment sort of had to look like, I went off on my own and got that training.
Mm-hmm.
It was really easy to do. It was $99.
I know.
Through CBI. It was a great training. It was 4 days. I always recommend it to everybody. And they do a lot of other trainings as well. But that's sort of how it started. And then I just kept getting more and more clients with OCD. This was before I got
Were you advertising that you had this training, or just, you know,
I was
just
not.
Like naturally they were drawn
no,
to work
with you? No, the universe just kept sending them my way.
Yeah.
And I wasn't trained in ERP yet, exposure and response prevention. And I remember having another client that came in and being like, gosh, they would be such an amazing fit for me. I like them so much. I can see myself doing this work with them. But I had to refer them out because I was not trained in it and I didn't feel competent enough to take them on.
Mm-hmm. So maybe tell us a little bit about ERP. So this is an OCD-specific therapy intervention.
Yeah.
That this is something I know nothing about, because this gets us into more like evidence-based practices.
Yes.
Which is from an expressive arts therapist, it's kind of on the opposite end of therapy. So anyway, I'm fascinated. So tell us about ERP.
Yeah, so exposure and response prevention is considered like the gold standard treatment to treat OCD, to work with it. So there's the exposure, meaning like exposing someone to their fears, the response prevention, right? So like helping them with that in how they respond to their fears. And then when I think of prevention is like not engaging in safety behaviors, not engaging in avoidance. So that's really important. So
being kind of neutral, getting to a place of neutrality?
Getting to a place where those fears aren't really consuming your life, where you're not engaging in the compulsions, where I would say when I do family work or have parents in session, helping them to not enable or reassure the OCD, to not allow kids to do their safety behaviors or their avoidance behaviors. Like, hey, I know that you don't eat fish because of your fear, but we're actually going to go to this restaurant and I'm not going to make that exception, right? Stuff like that. But obviously you have to be really gentle and light about it and like work your way up and build like a tolerance, build confidence with the client before they can even reach like some of their top fears. So there's that also hierarchy ladder that you build with clients, and you start with the smallest fear until you can work your way to the next one and the next one and the next one and then like the biggest one.
Okay. So what's coming up for me is that it sounds similar to accelerated resolution therapy, which is one of the things, trauma-based therapies that I am trained in, where we don't start with the biggest trauma. You know, we start with like lighter stuff, easier stuff. And we work up to it so that the client has confidence and understands the process.
Exactly.
And before just throwing them into the deep end because they're going to run away and maybe be re-traumatized.
Right, you know? Exactly. It's really the same. It's just, I think there's, right, that evidence-based practice, I think ART is as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think they're all just a little different in the way that they work or the way that you approach it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fascinating that you're able to bring that in. And then I think there's also a similarity between ERP and sort of expressive arts where there's this vulnerability. It's about the process. It's about really slowing down and leaning into the discomfort. And I think through creativity, clients can actually be more resilient.
Yeah.
And it's the same as this. When you can face your fears, you can do so much more.
Mm-hmm. So I have two questions. One is, how do you start bringing in the expressive arts? And is it just visual art? Do you do movement? Do you do drama, music? Like, because expressive arts is intermodal. So I'm curious about, you know, how does that come in, combining that with ERP? And then I would love for you to go back and talk more about how you work with families and helping to like coach parents on how to not enable kiddos. That's fascinating. I want to know more.
Okay. First question.
So the first question was expressive arts and ERP. How do you mix them?
So I find that I get a lot of people who are creative, a lot of dancers, a lot of artists, where they might shy away from ERP. And then when we talk about expressive arts and also using that as more of a soft landing to begin the treatment or get to know each other, I feel like they're a lot more engaged. Similar to ART, right? You need a client to buy into it.
Absolutely.
To buy into the treatment. Mm-hmm. And so that's the most important thing with ERP is you need your clients to buy into treatment. And so for me, just being an expressive arts therapist with the creative clients that I get, I feel like expressive art sort of lends that and gives that softer landing for a client who may not buy in right away or who needs to get to know each other or who needs to process their feelings through a different modality. And I think of melding the two together. For example, if a client's really afraid of knives, like instead of bringing in a knife, let's do an art piece around knives. Let's have you paint the knife that you're terrified of. Let's have you make a sculpture of knives. Let's do something like that. For clients who are afraid of vomiting. Now, this would be like the most extreme towards the end of the session. Once they've really gotten through all their fears, like, let's make some fake vomit in session.
I remember you telling me
Let's put it in our mouth. Let's put it into the toilet from our mouth. Let's vomit it up. Let's have some fun with it. And I think just that creativity that I learned from expressive arts has also really helped me with exposure and response prevention.
Yeah. Because one of the things as expressive arts therapists, so
Terry and I are trained very similarly. We went to sort of what's considered sister schools. Mm-hmm. I went to the California Institute of Integral Studies in San Francisco, and Terry went to Lesley University in Boston, and they often like swap professors and really similar curriculum. So we're trained very similarly. Would you say that expressive arts really lends itself to just like spontaneity and almost like using your intuition? Like, it's not so prescribed, like this is happening and so we're going to use paint, or this is happening, right, we're going to use movie. It's just, it's like a fluid process.
It is. And I think being able to learn how to do that in grad school actually like sort of increases my ability to do ERP in a way, because it is more instinctive. It is more about like, what is the client bringing in? What are their specific, distinct little fears? How do we do that together? How do we help you with that? How do we get creative to figure out the best treatment plan for you? And so that's where it's like fun to see it together. And some clients also might come in and have a session where they don't want to work on OCD and they want to talk about their boyfriend, or they want to talk about something else that's going on, and they might want to process through artwork. So we use it either way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think expressive arts has really enhanced like some of my own instincts and like intuition around what clients are needing. But then it's also allowed me to continue to be creative and meld it with like an evidence-based practice.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've told you this before, Sue. I could not get hired my first 2 years here in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
In South Bay anywhere, because no one wanted an expressive arts therapist. It was an evidence-based practice.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to recreate myself and find a way.
Yes. I think we have talked about this. I really wanted to work at the guidance center here in Long Beach.
Really?
And they said no to me because I wasn't trained in evidence-based and I didn't know how to do DMH paperwork. So I feel you on that. And I eventually found a place in treatment, which now has become one of my specialty areas. But treatment centers are, they have more wiggle room and are open to more, you know, creative out-of-the-box treatment. So mm-hmm. that's where I found a job eventually in South Orange County, you know. But yeah, it's hard to find placements that will take expressive arts therapists.
Or it's just hard to find placements that understand what we do.
Totally. Absolutely. Most people are like, what's that? And you work only with kids, right?
Oh, yeah, that's the big one. Oh, it's all for children. No, it's not.
No,
if you
not.
Had something to say around that for like just the general population or like everybody out there, like what would you say about expressive arts not being EVP, evidence-based practice, and what would you say about people thinking like it's for children only?
Okay, give me a second. Let me wrap my thoughts around that. Okay, these are my first thoughts on it. It's a big topic. Let me wrangle my thoughts. Okay. There absolutely is a place for evidence-based practices. Absolutely. However, sometimes I think it gets us into thinking in boxes, and that it's either or, you know, it's evidence-based practices or it's stupid and irrelevant. And that is just not the case. That's not how life works. You know, life is a big spectrum of gray. And expressive arts is able to work with that spectrum of gray.
It unleashes the gray.
Yes. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Yeah. So that's kind of my thought is like, I'm not poo-pooing on evidence-based practices. We're both trained in.
There is a time and a place for that.
Totally. And it just, I don't know, expressive arts therapy just lends itself to going so deep with folks. And getting at things that, you know, filling out worksheets wouldn't necessarily get at.
Yeah.
That makes me terrible.
No, I don't think it makes me terrible. I think one of the things for me as an expressive arts therapist is when people think it's just for adults, I get really frustrated because I actually think more adults need expressive arts and kids don't need it as much because they're already creative.
Yeah.
And they're problem solving, and because they're creative, they're able to problem solve better, and they actually have more resilience. And as we grow older, we are less creative, and we may not have that same grit or that resilience mm-hmm. that we might have had when we were younger, when we were more active in arts or dance or movement or doing those fun things.
Yes, I agree. And I don't think it's that we're less creative as adults. I think our creativity gets shut in a closet or tucked under the bed or told that, you know, it's not worthy of our time.
Yes, you're correct.
Which is complete and utter bullshit. So expressive arts is not just for kids. And I totally agree. When you do art stuff with kids, it's different than with adults. Kids will tell you exactly what's going on with them through their play and through their art.
Yeah.
There's no mystery, really. But with adults, there's a little bit more mystery around what's going to come out with their art or their movement or their music that they create. And there's this room for big ahas for adults.
Have you ever had like a really big aha with a client that like you're, that really like sticks out to you or using expressive arts?
I had one this week. I had one this week where we utilized psychodrama.
Mm-hmm.
And with someone who is more analytical, you know. And so it was a little bit out of the comfort zone, but I was like, let's do it. Let's see what comes from it. We did a psychodrama and there was a big aha that came from it because they could see their life out on the floor with all the scarves and the pillows. Before it was all jumbled in their head, but we literally like kind of pulled it out and put it out so that they could see like how much space the anxiety is taking up, how much space all these decisions are taking. It was really powerful for the client. It wasn't her. I was like, oh, I don't know if this is going to work. But they reported back that it was really, really helpful.
And that's the beauty of expressive arts is like going with that gut intuition, like being able to feel that with your client, using that counter transference, using the transference that's in the room as well, and like just creating something that's really unique. And to go back to ERP, I think it's similar with the exposures. You have to be creative. You really have to think through it. And a lot of it's like failing and trying. Oh, gosh, I had a client come in with like not liking sticky fingers. And I was like, gosh, what do we have in the room that's sticky?
Would you go with glue?
I found a date.
Oh, a date. Okay.
like the fruit. I found a date and I was like, hey, how do we feel about playing with this date during our session? Kid was like, sure. So
did the kid know what they were getting themselves into?
Yeah. They played with it. And then like we had to touch with our sticky hands all around the room and like get the date paste everywhere and like the stickiness. But that's the intervention, right? Mm-hmm. So it's using that creativity, thinking out of the box. And mm-hmm. it's, for me, they're very similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ooh, I love it. Paige, thoughts?
I'm curious if you're thinking about adults being feeling like expressive arts therapy is more for children. How do you work with adults? Like, and I think I've asked you this before, Sue, like as an adult, as a poet, as someone who loves art, I feel like I would get to therapy session one or two or three and be like, nope, I'm not doing, like, I like the creatives, but I'm not doing that. Like, how do you work with that? Because I feel like kids are much more likely to be like, yeah, I'll give it a shot. Like, that sounds kind of crazy, but let's do it. Kids are kind of, you know.
I feel like I pepper it in.
Uh-huh.
But what about you, Sue? I'm really curious.
Yeah, well, my thoughts go in several directions. One, totally peppering it in and not just throwing folks. I think we've talked about this, that if you were to come to see me, Paige, I wouldn't throw you into the deep end of doing, like, an anger release psychodrama.
Yeah.
That's kind of, like, really intense work.
Well, that wouldn't
work.
Be appropriate to do in
exactly.
the beginning, right? Like,
right.
You need to build your way up.
Right. So we might start with, you want to play me a song this week that speaks to your week. And then we listen to it and we talk about it. Or maybe like doing a body scan, like, you know, starting. So, okay. In therapy, there's kind of an arc, right? So in the beginning of therapy, when you're working with somebody, you start with like assessment, building rapport, building coping skills, relaxation skills, and then you get into the meat of really processing whatever the stuff is and sort of getting more into action.
Mm-hmm.
And then you close it up by reviewing the treatment episode and building in strengths and resources at the end to send them off into their life, right?
Yeah.
So where was I going with that? What was I going to say about that?
Can't read your mind.
Talking about in the beginning with adults. And the reason I was asking like, you know, thinking about people listening to this conversation or learning about the Expressive Arts Collective, you know, encouraging adults to give it a shot.
Yes.
To give it a try.
Right. So what I was going to say is, you know, in the building rapport, peppering it in. So like, let's listen, you're into music and poetry. So let's utilize music and poetry because that's what you're comfortable in, right? And then maybe when we get into the coping skills and relaxation, I have all kinds of like art activities and like movement activities that are just real light and easy, but help to ease you in. Mm-hmm. And then probably by the time we get to doing the big processing and the action work, you know me, I know you, we trust each other. So if I suggest, hey, today are you open to doing some psychodrama? You're much more likely to be like, yeah, let's try it. Because you've had successes along the way mm-hmm. with the other stuff.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I totally agree with that, right? It is like building that rapport slowly, building up that confidence and that relationship before you can get to that point where you can do a full creative session. I also think we all as expressive arts therapists like have all these interventions in our head, but we don't always use them, right? Like, I think we all have these things in our back pocket. Like, oh, I really wanted to do this today, but like, it just wasn't the session. It wasn't the time. It didn't feel right. And so like that definitely comes up. And so it is us as the thermometer, right? You are the thermometer in the room. I am the thermometer gauging and measuring where the client is, where we want to go, what feels appropriate, what doesn't. And I think that's really based on like how much expressive arts you're going to use that day or what you're going to introduce the client to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. What was I going to say? I'm just thinking about that. Nope, gone. Does that answer your question, though, Paige?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Got any other burning questions for us over there?
I mean, we could just go into like Pages in School and have all the questions. I'm kidding. No, I'm kidding. I'm curious too. You guys were both kind of talking about how you would like to work with veterans. Can you talk a little bit about that and what you how that like we're physically located on a 27-acre housing supportive housing community, and about half of the 1,600 residents or so are veterans. So I'm curious what that would look like.
Yeah.
You want to speak to that?
Sure. In grad school, I had a chance. It was like a one-day thing where we worked with a bunch of veterans in downtown Boston. I really enjoyed it. We went around. We had different tables set up, actually. There was like an art table, and there was a scarf table, and there was this. And it was a group of us. I think it was like 10 expressive arts therapists, maybe a few more. And we all divided and just went around and connected with the different veterans that were in the room and like encouraged them to engage in the different modalities or the clay or the scarves or the art stuff that we had set up. That was sort of like a mini, like, in service. But I think we don't do enough work with veterans. We don't do enough for them in our community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think expressive arts therapy could be really helpful with some of the trauma, the PTSD, the anxiety, the depression, all the things that might come with being a veteran or anything that is coming up in this community, in this world. Mm-hmm. But Sue, I'd love to hear a little bit more about your work. Have you worked with veterans? Are you currently working with
anyone? I have not worked with veterans, but I'm really interested in working with veterans. I work with trauma, you know. I work more in substance use and complex trauma. But I would love to branch out and offer expressive arts therapy to veterans. We're looking at turning the Expressive Arts Collective into a nonprofit. So we've started the process of putting everything together. And part of that is thinking through what are the different populations that we're going to be offering services to, what's the programming going to look like. And so working with veterans has come up that that is something that we intend to offer programming. And so then Terry got here this morning and I just mentioned it. And then we were talking about it before we went on air. That's something that you're really interested in as well. So I can see working together to offer some kind of expressive arts programming here in Long Beach for veterans.
I mean, I know we're going to work together at some point. The question is when.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
Nice.
Awesome. Yeah, we do a lot of physically here. We do a lot of writing groups. We do have, where are they? Somewhere in this room, there's a box of like art supplies that are projects designed.
I see all the crayons, colored pencils, markers, tissue, yeah. Paper mache.
Isn't it exciting as an expressive arts therapist to come in here and be like, oh!
There are a couple of boxes that have these art supplies that are projects designed specifically for veterans. So a lot of them are specific for Vietnam vets. And so there's like different like bracelet making projects, and there's a little boat that they assemble and they paint, and you know, we've never, as City Heart, called ourselves like an art therapy group, but a lot of the stuff that we do is therapeutic. And yeah. So we talk, that's the word we use because we don't want to misrepresent. But it's really incredible to see how just the art, the creative process can open folks up. And, you know, you get a bunch of veterans in the room. You can have two veterans in one room. They're going to have three or four different conversations going at the same time. But then you put yourself in there. If you're not a veteran, the art is kind of what you share. And that's mm-hmm. what kind of brings it all together.
Right. And that's a good point, right, to expressive arts is like that is what you share with other people. And it's also engaging in that process together and the witnessing that is mm-hmm. so important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Christian, we've talked about it, but art is like the third in the room. Mm-hmm. And it's like the bridge of understanding. Because we can't know everything about our client's experience, but when they put it into movement or sound or an image, you're right there with them and you get it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. In a way that you might not be able to get it just talking about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're reminding me of something else in OCD. There's this new, if it's okay to go back to that
for
a minute.
Go for it.
There's this newer training that's come out. And it's called ICBT, which is inference-based cognitive behavioral therapy. It's very similar to ERP. I'm still learning all about it. I'm mm-hmm. actually doing a training in a few weeks. But they actually, in one of their modules, they have the bridge. And on that bridge, right, you have the land of right here, right now. And then you have OCD land. And often I will ask clients to depict where they are on that bridge right now. And where do they want to be on that bridge?
Mm-hmm.
So it also, again, reminds me of some of that expressive arts and just the metaphor that you brought up.
Mm-hmm.
And so just to show you like how they do really intersect.
Well, that's interesting.
Therapeutic practices.
So that's interesting. So in accelerated resolution therapy, we also have the bridge at the end of sessions where it's the past, where we're leaving the problem issue. And we're going over the bridge into the future that's symptom-free. So there's also bridge imagery.
That is really similar.
In accelerated resolution therapy, too. And sometimes people get stuck on the bridge. And so then we talk about where are they at on the bridge. What's keeping them from moving forward? What do they need? Is there anything else they need to let go of so that they can move forward free into the future symptom-free?
You know? Or even just expressive arts, like draw a bridge and draw what's on it and where are you headed and what are you moving towards? And using that imagery as well, or even just building that bridge.
Yeah, and I think there's also a psychodrama coloring sheet that depicts a bridge. And then it's all these like gingerbread bodies. And the idea is you like draw your gingerbread body, like, you know, either are you hanging off the bridge? Are you like
zombie-ish.
On the edge? Are you a zombie? Are you running? Are you crawling? So the psychodrama coloring sheet like has all these different ways that you can even be. Not just where are you on the bridge, but like what's your presentation on the bridge? Which I love. Because sometimes it's not as straightforward as I'm walking across the bridge. Sometimes I'm literally crawling across the bridge.
Sometimes I'm not.
Right. Sometimes I'm like, hell no, I'm not going across that bridge, you know, very guarded, you know.
And that's where all these different practices come into play of like, nothing is straightforward.
Yes.
Nothing is always what it seems, or you said something else before that really hit me, but, you know, we don't always know. And so being able to like learn all these different therapeutic styles, modalities, theories, like we get to pull from that as clinicians and see what works where.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think this is where our training in expressive arts really comes in handy, where going back to that evidence-based practice, is it's good to have that, but then it's also good to be able to have this well of creative ideas to pull from because, you know, it's not always this or that.
Right. It's
and
not
we,
always
and we gotta,
straightforward.
And we got to be ready to meet the client where they're at.
So that's my favorite thing. With expressive arts, I feel like I have just been trained to like roll with it and always be on my toes.
Absolutely.
And I feel like there's always an intervention coming out.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like sometimes I just pull shit out of my ass. I'm
absolutely.
How did I do that? Where did this come from?
Absolutely. I feel like that was kind of how I was trained.
Yeah.
Is like you have the clinical understanding of what's going on with the client. You have your case conceptualization and you have your theoretical orientations. And that's the theory that you learn in school.
Yep.
But when you're in practice, when you're in the room with the client, sometimes you literally have to pull things out of your ass. But you're not just doing it like unconscious. You know, we have all this training behind us and this clinical knowledge. So it's not really pulling it out of our ass. It's kind of more like
making an educated, making an educated,
spontaneous
moment.
We have the clinical understanding in the background, but we also like have to make stuff up on the spot for clients sometimes.
Yes, all the time. Yeah. All the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's what I like learning about the most is just how much of who you are as a person gets to play. And so like, you know, there are lots of therapists who all have their own orientations, their own experiences, all their own toolkits that they've, you know, built over the years and their training and whatnot. But then actually who they are, who they've, you know, what they've experienced, but who, you know, you guys are two very different people, but you're doing similar work, but you're doing it very differently.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. I think that's really cool too, because it means that, you know, let's say I meet with someone for the first time in therapy and I've got green hair and I'm a woman and I'm like loud and maybe I'm not the right person, you know? And that I think is just a good thing to keep in mind too. Like the person that the therapist is kind of shapes the work too, which is really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Which is, I don't know. I work very person-centered, and part of that is that I get to show up as my weird, wacky self, you know, within boundaries. Within ethical boundaries, but
no boundaries for the weird wacky Sue, please.
But like, what I'm saying is, like, therapist Sue is not that far off from like normal Sue, you know. Put a little bit more professionalism on it, but like, I love what I do because I feel like I get to show up very authentically, and I think expressive art just lends itself to how my brain works, anyways. You know, how like it goes in like 20 different directions and has all these different ideas. I feel like it's a good match for my personality. And then I love that I get to show up authentically in sessions and then give permission to the clients to show up authentically and be their weird, wacky, wild self, mm-hmm. with green hair.
Officially, Sue on air encourages Paige to go to therapy.
I'm just kidding. And keep the green hair.
I really do like the green hair. I know I tell you like every time I see you, but the green hair is just so good.
Thank you. I'm never going back.
Yeah.
Until it falls out.
So what else? What else shall we talk about? Paige, you want to ask us some questions, some student questions while you have us here?
That's fun. So I'm really excited about the idea of narrative therapy. And so I'm curious if either of you have any experience with that or.
Yes. Did you take narrative in school?
I did, but I don't... Sometimes I'm like, do I use it? Do I not?
So, I definitely took a couple workshops in school. And I don't know if this was just the way my school held space for it, or if it's actually part of it. But a big focus was on how to use narrative with communities.
Mm-hmm.
Not just like individually, but like with communities. And like reauthoring the story of communities and empowering communities, which I really, I'm getting a little goosebumps.
Well, that makes sense. And I think that also works really well with veterans, right? Like we are here with you and we're in this facility that caters to them. And so I think like, right, it is about telling your story. But I think there's also a huge component in my school around storytelling and what that looked like.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes me think of narrative therapy. I know it's a little different.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's why I get so excited about it. Because it's a storytelling. I mean, our mission.
And you love that. You love writing and stuff.
Yeah. And the mission of City Heart is wholeheartedly loving our city and telling its story. So creating spaces for folks to share their own personal stories, but also as a community, what is that story that we all share together?
Mm-hmm.
And so naturally, I get excited about the idea of narrative therapy. And I think the part that excites me the most is like, once you've reshaped it, reauthored it, it's yours to tell, finding an audience to share it with, which is where we can work together.
Yeah. And the witnessing part, not just, you know, that is part of narrative. Because remember, like, therapists will write a letter to the client about their like gifts, talents, and strengths at the end. So that witnessing is a big part of narrative therapy. And it just like in expressive arts, I think that witnessing is so important, and being able to reflect back someone's experience and their growth through the therapeutic process is so important. I'm trying to like pull up my file in my brain about narrative, because I know I use certain narrative interventions. But I probably wouldn't be like, oh, this is narrative right now. I'm going to, you know, it's just like it happens. So there's definitely one that I use that's externalizing an issue where we draw it out and then we have like an interview with it, and it can become really playful, and so it like can diminish the power this big scary issue has, and so in the way you're able to reauthor the story around that issue.
Mm-hmm.
So I use that all the time. You know, have people draw their shame monsters, their inner critic, and then we interview the inner critic, we dress up as the inner critic, we like get into it. And I remember doing that in narrative therapy in the workshop that we did.
So it's interesting you bring that up, because I feel like that's what I do with OCD sometimes, of like draw the bully in your mind.
Yeah.
Like, see what it says. What do you want to say back to it? Like stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Which also then goes back to our evidence-based practice, that gets us into CBT and like bossing back to like negative thoughts.
Right. Mm.
But we're doing it from an expressive arts and narrative lens, where we're externalizing the issue. So like once you go through school and then you get into practice, you start to notice how all these things overlap and how it could be narrative and expressive arts, but it also could be CBT.
I actually think that's the difference of being in school versus actually practicing, of like when you're in school, it's like this model and this theory and this person created this. And then like when you're in practice, you're just sort of pulling from what feels intuitive, what feels right, what this client is needing, and not thinking so much about just like in terms of like this is the theory and this is the that, I feel like.
Yeah. Did you go on a tangent there?
Not at all. And I think, I mean, just thinking about for someone who would maybe want to know what that would look like practically, like the difference between like CBT, identifying the negative thought and trying to work on changing that, as opposed to, no, let's actually experience changing it by looking at it and talking to it. And that's, I think that's super cool.
I think it's juicy and exciting, and I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
And every discipline is like that. Like the classroom, the textbook is not what happens when you get into the real world.
It's not the end all be all.
Right.
It's not like you're just a CBT therapist. It's not like you are just one thing.
Right.
Yeah. So many things.
Yeah.
Any other? That was a great question. Any other questions you got?
For folks that are, so this is like a very obviously Paige is asking the question. So for folks that are like kind of circling the mental health arena, which is what I've been doing for a long, like for 8 or so years, just like working at City Heart and trying to see how I could fit into the puzzle. Are there any like encouragements, like for folks that feel like, oh, maybe like I have too much of my own personal stuff to figure out, I'm not going to be good enough to help someone else.
None of us are perfect. We are all flawed. We are all human. We are not made to be perfect. I think of like a lot of acceptance and commitment therapy and like accepting your feelings, accepting yourself. That's also great for OCD, by the way, using acceptance and commitment therapy. But doesn't matter what you have going on, if you feel called to sit and listen and witness and help others, I think there's always a space where, yes, you do have to be actively working on your stuff. All therapists have therapists.
Not all therapists have therapists.
Well, most. You're right. Not all, but at some point, maybe we all had one. Mm. Maybe. I don't know.
Highly recommend that your therapist have a therapist.
Well, highly recommend. I've definitely met therapists who have not ever been in therapy, but I think it's so important to be a therapist and be in therapy and know what it's like to be the client and to experience that. And that's why I say, like, I do think most therapists, okay, not all, but most therapists should have a therapist. And I think it actually makes, for me personally, a better therapist when I do have my therapist to process things with and engage with, and to just, like, I don't want to say curb my feelings at all, but to be able to hold my own feelings as well. Just to know what that process feels like. To understand it as the client, as the clinician.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what you have going on. If you want to do it, do it.
I definitely felt earlier on in life when people would be like, hey, Sue, you'd be a great counselor. You'd be a great therapist. I was like, no, I am way too fucked up to ever give any thoughts, advice, guidance to someone else. There's no way. And then I went to therapy. and I did my trauma work. And it's an ongoing process. It's not like you go to therapy once and then you're all better forever.
No.
But you can get yourself to a place where, you know, you're in a more grounded space to be able to do the work. And I definitely agree. I think therapists absolutely benefit from going to their own therapy. As expressive arts therapists, well, in my program, I don't know about at Leslie.
Yeah, I had, but I had a dance movement therapist.
That's what I thought, yeah.
And I really enjoy working with her. Like, we would do walking meditations. She would actually, like, we would make art. And, gosh, I actually remember at my internship, my supervisor was an expressive arts therapist, and the other girls were art therapists, and she gave them an art piece. She gave me a keychain. And I was like, damn it, I just wanted her. I wanted the art piece like everyone else. I didn't want the keychain, even though it was like a nice keychain. So my own therapist made me an art piece that I still have on our last session. And that was really, really heartwarming for me.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Which I feel kind of goes back to, like, that's a narrative intervention to do that for someone.
I didn't think about that.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm pretty sure in narrative, towards the end, the therapist writes a therapeutic letter to the client, reflecting all their progress and gifts, talents, and strengths.
Well, that's really cute, because I still have this little art piece, and on the back is like a little note.
Yeah.
So I just felt so heard, so listened to, and I still have it.
Yeah.
And that was so special and important to me. I have also had my fair share of, like, not great therapists.
Mm-hmm. I have one. So then also in psychodynamic, this is known as a transitional object.
Yes, it is.
Right? So it's like same, it's a similar intervention that across three different therapy styles, it kind of is the same thing.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. What was I going to say? Oh, I was talking about how as expressive arts therapists, we had to see expressive arts therapists.
Yes.
And so now I see a psychodramatist, and it's the best thing in all the land. I love her. Christina, if you're out there listening, I love you. Thank you for what you do and what you offer.
Yeah.
It's incredibly healing. I don't remember what the question was.
We were just talking about encouraging folks who have their own side of the street to clean up. How they can their still help stuff. Other people. Yeah.
So, yes. And I think that if you have stuff in your life, it actually might make you a great therapist, because then you really will understand people who have stuff in their lives. And you can empathize and speak to that, you know?
Definitely. I mean, I also think, like, what there's that idea that there's, like, the wounded healer. And I think no matter what, we have all been through something. We've all experienced something that we've worked through or are working on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the process never stops.
It doesn't.
No. There's always layers of that onion to be peeled back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You do have a live listener who was wondering if they could call in and ask a question.
Yeah, that would okay. be great.
Sure.
Okay, give me 1 second for to get that working. This is officially our first
this
live
is so
call.
Exciting.
Oh, this is so
exciting.
Oh my God, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening and wanting to ask a question.
So hopefully
so
my heart is just
about.
Bursting.
I didn't have the...
I know we got a little off topic with the OCD stuff.
It happens all the time on this show. We just go off on little tangents and then eventually find our way back.
Yeah. Well, while we wait for them to call back, I was curious too, two things. Do you ever have clients, like, in the first or second session ask you, do you have your own therapist? Or, like, what kinds of questions do folks ask you? Because I feel like when I, like, first started going to therapy, I didn't know I could ask any questions. I was just like, all right, I'm here. You tell me what to do.
I don't feel like they have. I feel like it's more been, like, a kid after 2 years. Been like, so do you have your own therapist?
Yeah. All right, we got the call. We'll come back to that one.
Oh, okay.
Hi.
You are live on City Heart Radio.
To accept, press 1. To send a voicemail, press 2.
I lied.
We're almost there.
To accept, press 1. There you go. You are live on City Heart Radio.
Am I live on the radio? No way.
Hi.
Is that Sue?
No, that was Terry.
Is this Izzy?
This is.
What up, Izzy?
I am excited to be listening right now, and I appreciate all the art therapy you do.
Aw, thanks. Do you have a question for us?
Fun.
Yeah, what
I thought
can
I'd
we
call
answer
in because
for you?
I was listening to the show and I thought you guys were doing a great job.
Oh, thanks, Izzy. Do you have a specific question for us about expressive arts therapy, OCD, or anything in life?
I do because I learned a little bit about narrative therapy back in my day about 20 years ago. And I wanted to see how you actually incorporate the use of art with narrative therapy, because I was trying to, you might have said it, but I was only able to tune in for a couple minutes and then it went out. So how do you use art with that?
How do you use art with narrative therapy?
Visual art or any of the art forms?
I would say more so like the other art platforms, like painting, drawing, writing, anything like that.
Yeah. So, you want me to answer first?
Yeah.
Okay. So, in terms of visual arts, I was talking about an intervention where I have folks draw their problem issue, and then we interview it and work with it that way. So, with expressive arts, it's intermodal. So that means that we want to try and use at least two different of the creative modalities together. So, you know, when I do that drawing of the problem, then oftentimes we will move into standing up and acting it out or creating some kind of sculpture, or maybe moving to the sand tray and putting the issue in the tray and working with it that way. Or it might turn into a psychodrama where, you know, we stand up and move around the space and put scarves out and pillows to represent all the different issues that are connected to the drawing that we just made. Especially with like reauthoring the story, getting folks to, I think the traditional way in narrative therapy is like therapeutic letter writing, right? You write letters about things. So that's a creative process all by itself. I don't know if I'm making sense with
yeah,
how
I think
to integrate.
Sense. I'm just not as familiar okay. with narrative therapy personally.
Okay. But basically we just weave in and we use our creativity to move through the different modalities to figure out what does the client need to help them reauthor their story. So sometimes that's acting it out. Sometimes that's writing out a creative story. Or where it's not like, this is my story, but maybe we pick characters and we pick a landscape and they do some creative writing.
Right, or you tell it from the point of view of one of the feelings.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah. Just very much
that's
a
cool.
psychodrama.
No, I appreciate it. I was curious how you would incorporate it, because, again, when I took the course, you know, studied this stuff 20 years ago, it was all how to just talk to the person, how to talk to your client, you know,
mm-hmm.
and how to use narrative when you're talking to the client, but not inviting them into the process themselves. So this is really great, and I'm glad that somebody like you out there doing it. So just wanted to say I appreciate you guys.
Oh, thanks, Izzy. Appreciate your call.
Bye. That was fun. That was sweet.
I know. I love that. Little cutie.
He's all right.
That's Pika's husband.
Oh, really? I definitely had a thought. Now I lost it. I don't even know what it is now.
About narrative and expressive
art?
No,
just about something that he had said. And then just also...
yeah. So, can we go back to OCD for a second? Because I have a few more questions that I had
sure.
prepared
yes.
that I forgot to ask you.
Nice.
That's okay.
So, how can expressive arts therapy help someone with OCD in their everyday life beyond therapy sessions?
So, my first thought is always, like, I wouldn't necessarily recommend expressive arts as treatment for OCD. I would always say, like, hey, you should probably find an ERP-trained therapist, exposure response prevention trained. I do also pull from acceptance and commitment therapy, CBT, and then utilize expressive arts as well. Because of OCD, like, I wouldn't say, like, hey, like, you just only need expressive arts. I've definitely had clients try that with me and just have said, like, I'm sorry, it's not a good fit. Like, I don't want to make your OCD worse, mm-hmm. right? I don't want to use art in a way to add or create new convulsions.
Mm.
So there's also like that fine line of like being careful. Like if someone, I'm trying to think of a good example right now, but if someone has like the compulsion to, they need to write a tally mark every single time, and like that's what they're doing to make themselves feel better for whatever the fear is, like I wouldn't want to then engage them in breathing techniques or art to then use that as the band-aid every time, because that would also just jumpstart the OCD even more.
Oh, see, this is good to know.
So, like replacing
right,
the tally marking with the art.
An art thing or a breathing thing, because there are also mental compulsions. When people talk about pure OCD, that's a misnomer.
Oh, like, yeah, tell us more about OCD.
And I'm not, like, I would always talk to Max Maisel about it. Like, he's my OCD god specialist person that I always refer to. I feel like he's sort of a mentor for me. And I don't know enough about it. I feel like I'm still learning. But there's no such thing as pure OCD. It just means that you're doing mental rituals. Mental compulsions. Sorry, not mental rituals. Mental compulsions in your mind versus, like, you're not actually like, oh, if I don't touch this cup, my mom's going to die, so I have to touch the cup. Right?
So what would it look like? What's the mental compulsion look
everyone's
like?
Everyone's is so different. So okay. It could be, like, having a thought to, like, not engage in that thought. And then that is the compulsion. Right. So then we have to be so careful of, like, what do we engage in? What are we avoiding? What are we continuing to do to feel safe?
So the obsession is the thought, right? And the compulsion is the thing that they have to do to fix, or not fix, but to address the thought.
Right. Exactly. Or what they have to do to feel safe, or what's going to help them feel safe. It's like a little band-aid that you're sticking on.
Yeah.
So that's where, like, the art is, like, being really careful with that as well, of, like, how you're utilizing it in session. If it's to, like, express right feelings, I think that's fine, but it's not used as the treatment for OCD.
Yeah. Okay, so that's really good to know. That's super good to know. Which leads me to another topic that is a hot debate amongst expressive arts therapists and art therapists.
Yeah.
Which is therapists who use art in their sessions but are not trained in any kind of art therapy or expressive arts therapy. You know. It's a hot topic. Because of this issue.
I will tell you, I get really pissed when people are like, I use expressive arts. Honey, you need to start saying expressive arts based because you are not trained in it. That's, like, something for me, because I spent all this money and all this time training in it. And then also if I want to get my REIT, registered expressive arts therapy
Which Terry and I are both working on.
Yeah, we have a really fun supervisor.
Yeah.
But, like, you can totally utilize it, but also being really mindful that you may not know how to utilize the actual tools. You're not trained in it. You don't know how to shift between modalities or from modality, or actually know, like, anything about the expressive arts continuum. So, like, please just be safe out there, but also, like, be mindful of how you advertise yourself.
Yes. Yes. As Terry is sharing, I'm over here like, yes. Just be very careful with how you use it and very mindful. And I've experienced that where I've been with folks who are not trained in expressive arts, but they're using art in whatever they're doing.
And I think that's great.
Yes. But I was like,
there's a little improv.
The big and.
Yes. And I was like, oh, this person doesn't know about transitioning into different modalities.
Right.
Oh, this person doesn't know, like, sort of how to move through things to deepen the process.
Right.
And it felt kind of clunky to me. And I was like, oh. So, yes, I would definitely recommend, if you want to use art, if you're curious about it, get some kind of training in it so that you know the impact of it. Because intention is different than impact.
Right. And it's the same as OCD. Like, get that training. You can't just treat it, like, if you don't understand OCD, you don't have that specific training. Like, I would say, like, I'm sorry, EMDR is not for OCD. It can be very similar in, like, exposing yourself to things or sitting with it, but it is not the same at all. And being really mindful. And I think part of that is also, like, being a clinician who does consultation.
Yes.
Consulting with other people, checking in, right? It can also be lonely as a private practice clinician. But I actually have a consultation group that I run every other Tuesday. It's 10 therapists. It's wonderful. And then also being part of other supervisions and consultations, I think, is so important, that we are always, you know, thinking out loud with other people, checking our work, checking in with ourselves and with others, and supporting each other so that we are not doing harm to our clients.
I also offer expressive art supervision if anybody is interested in that. So
that's great.
Yeah. So you have your consultation group. I offer supervision. Do reach out if you're at all interested in incorporating arts, because I do think that having folks who are trained in it to help guide is a very good idea.
Definitely. I definitely feel like in our group practice that I'm part of right now, I definitely get like, hey, like what intervention should I use with this client? And just like talking about it or even encouraging training and stuff like that. But can I answer a different question?
Yes.
I didn't ask, but it's probably one of my favorite
ones. Oh my God, yes.
I know we
go
probably have to wrap up. But you did ask if you could describe the therapeutic process. Oh, sorry, not. Where is it? If you could describe the therapeutic process of ERP integrated with expressive arts using three words. I actually have four.
Ooh, okay, great.
It's messy. I love getting messy. I love getting dirty with clients. Like, love art and clay everywhere. My carpet is really colorful just so that we can make a mess and people don't notice it. Creative. Both are so creative in nature. Empowering. I think it's so empowering to use expressive arts. And then also being able to expose yourself to fears is empowering. I want clients to be able to sit and tolerate feelings, to be able to sit through the discomfort and learn that it's not going to like be like that worst case scenario, or it's going to actually hurt them. And so I think both therapies are so exceedingly empowering. And the depth of both of them, I think definitely expressive arts pulls from a different kind of depth. And then I think both, you have to be really vulnerable. You have to be really, really, really vulnerable to do expressive arts. You have to be vulnerable to work on your fears.
Mm-hmm.
So it was messy, creative, empowering, and vulnerable.
Love it. Love it, love it. So, Terry, if folks listening want to reach out to you, want to see you because this is your specialty, how can they find you?
I am online for Psychology Today. I do have my own website. I go by Teresa Goldstein. It's T-H-E-R-E-S-A, not Theresa. It is Teresa. Love when people pronounce it wrong. I do go by Terry. I am located in Hermosa Beach. I do see clients online in person. I do prefer in person. But I also think with OCD, it's nice to see people online. It makes it easy to see what's going on in their home, what are triggers that are happening at home, and exposing them to those fears.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Paige, any final questions, comments, thoughts?
Just thank you both so much. I definitely took some notes and appreciate knowing that you offer supervision for expressive arts therapy. And I wrote your four words down, so expect to see those showing up later in the social media world of the Expressive Arts Collective.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Terry, for being here. Thanks, Paige, for jumping in and chatting with us. I appreciate you both so much. And thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Soon.
Bye.